actually, when you're talking about kinyoning, you have two steps that are relevant. The first step is mechusar emuna, which you are learning now. The commitment of people, the meeting of minds, but this in itself does not yet create a transfer of ownership. It's a commitment as such that obligates the person to hold by his word and not to break his commitment. The second step, as we know, is the transfer of ownership, which is done by a kinyan, mode of acquisition, as you call it in English. Now, this is a unique concept in halacha. It's not being shared in, this concept is not shared in general law, common law, civil law, whatever you call it. Let's call it, for the sake of our discussion, secular law. Secular law, you don't have such a concept altogether. We do not differentiate between those two steps. Once you have a meeting of minds, it's equal to a contract. A meeting of minds in itself is enough to obligate other person to draft a document that will prove the transfer of ownership. In other words, signing a contract is not a mode of acquisition. Signing a contract is proof that a meeting of minds took place, and consequently, the obligation of transfer of ownership is here. There is no concept of kinyan in secular law. That's very important to understand. In other words, what we are saying is that ulumas halacha, in contrast to halacha, in halacha you need to have an action, an act, that affects this transfer. You don't have such a concept in common law. This is a very important concept, because what you're learning now, the inyonim of mechusar emuna, and what you're going to learn now very soon, which is setumta, have a lot to do with what we are talking about. Setumta is unique in that sense. Because if you're going to see later on in the discussion, setumta adapts certain principles that we find in common law and we apply to halacha as well. Although the structure as such is completely different. You're going to say, why do I bother you with theory? Let's talk about the halacha lemaisa part of it, which we'll do in a moment. But I just want to tell you a very interesting insight that quite famous person in Orthodox Jewry, Professor Aaron Tversky, shared with me numerous times. I don't know if you know him. He's very famous between Bali Halocha and in other areas. He, for many years, was a dean in Hofstra, in the Department of Law. Today, I think, he's in the 9/11 Commission, if I'm not mistaken. But he's an expert in law. So he told me that he was teaching for many, many years, was teaching law, and that American students are, that's what he told me, I have no idea, but what he told me, the students were more interested in the practical application than in the theory, until it came to a point where he challenged them to solve particular problems of practical law, which was impossible to solve if you didn't understand the theory behind it. So you have to be a theoretician as well. It's not good enough if you just understand, if you want to understand the practical application of it. To understand the practical application, you need to know, so to say, the rest of the story, what's behind it. And that's precisely what's very important when you discuss kinyoni, and when you discuss setumta in particular, if you're going to see. Now, we are still in mechusar emuna. Mechusar emuna will introduce you into setumta. First case that I want to discuss with you today, which is still mechusar emuna, is the machlokes harishonim of trei tarim. What is trei tarim? There are two shiurim, two different prices, a change of price that occurred between the commitment and between the actual execution of the sale itself. Trei tarim. You had it in Shulchan Aruch and the end of Meresh Dalet. That the Rambam brings this machlokes. The Machaber doesn't put this machlokes. The machlokes are Rishonim, the Balamo and the Ramban. And you see in the very last Sif of Simin Resh Dalet. I think you have it here in the printout, if I'm not mistaken. Yes, you have it. Chapter Rumot says, Afal pi shebedvorim beloy moed, yochel azabo, your soul, if just it was a commitment, without even giving money, he could back out, ואין צריך לקבל אוף בשפורה, אין תזאת אקספט מלפף משפורה, בכל מקום רואי לו עודם למד בדיבור רואי אף אפי שלא יוצא שום קניין, רק דבורם ביאלנו. It's proper and right that he should hold up his commitment, although there was only a verbal commitment. וכל החוי דבר בין לוקח, בין מויכה, אין רוח החום מלויכה מנו. Somebody who did it, and he backed out, so אין רוח החום מלויכה מנו. חזל not very happy about his behavior. Now, here comes the machloikis. Ve'ani mila, and this is true, v'chatare. If there was no change as far the price, the value of that merchandise was concerned. Aber treitare, there was a change, meaning we committed ourselves when the price was, let's say, $100, and now at the time when I would like to, when the execution, the time of execution comes, there was a change in the value of it, a change of price, but territory, and the memechusre mono. So then, one is permitted to back out. So now, if you just skip a line, it says, v'yeshonrim, but there is a disputing opinion. It says, afilu betreitare also lachzor. Even when you have two shiorim, you are not permitted to back out. V'mchodabo yeshba meshum mechusre mono. And if you did so, then there is a problem with mechusre mono, you are not permitted to do so, you shouldn't do so. Said the Remo v'chein yeika, and I, in the opinion, says the Remo that he should hold like the second opinion, which is the Chumri, which is which says you shouldn't do that. It's prohibited to back out, although there was only a verbal commitment. The Shach here in Tzivkot Nehei says, "Bebach nistapik b'zeh, how the psak should be." The Bach has a sophic about it. It's not so clear if the hacho, if the decision of the Remo is correct. Since the Balamoy, who is the lenient opinion here, we find Yerushalmi Mefurish Lakim, so it seems to be that the Shach does not necessarily agree with the decision of the Remo. In fact, there's a discussion about it, what you should do. Some of them are very Machmir. The Mecham Soifer seems to be more makel on that. Or Hashulchan says Mefurashir that the Mechus Ramona in the concept, in the question of Treitare, if there was a Shinu Yashar, then it's a mitzvah chasidus not to be choizer, which seems to be that mitzvah ikar din you could be choizer. So this is the same plain halach. Now let me elaborate for a moment what is this concept of Treitare that we are talking about, of two shiorim. In the Gemara, the case that the Gemara discusses is, as it says here, precisely as we just mentioned it earlier, let's say today we made up a particular price, and this is the price that it is, $100, but then there was a change in the market. The market value of this merchandise changed. So at the time when it comes to the execution of this commitment, when we have to make the sale, then there was a change. It's not worth anymore. 100, it's now worth 120. So here the question is, as we said earlier, being that there was no commitment, since the commitment itself did not transfer in any vain fashion ownership, it's a commitment. And if it's only a question of commitment, I committed myself. If the value is, as we discussed at the time of meeting of minds, but now, while later, when the actual execution of this commitment comes about, well, you know, that's a different story. I never had in mind to commit myself to something that at the time of execution of sale had a different value. This is the question, right? So the sum would say, no, the beginning of the process is already earlier. The beginning of the process starts once you are committed to the mythical minds, although it did not yet transfer ownership, nevertheless, it's enough to have you locked in. And consequently, although there is a change in value, nevertheless, you have to look at it like the transfer already started to take place at the very beginning. The other opinion say, no, it's not the case. There was a commitment. There was a commitment to execute this kind of sale, given that the original value is still there at the time of execution. If this is not the case, we never committed ourselves. Fine? So that's what I understand what the machlok is here all about. When it comes to halacha lemaisa, fine, so you ask your offer to do, v'chule v'chule. Sometimes you're going to say that if there's a hefsek merubah, if there's a major loss here because of this commitment, there is more reason to be lenient. And others will say, in this case, you shouldn't do that. A person, whatever he committed himself to, should hold by. Although it's halakhically not enforceable, but it is the proper way to do. I want to talk to you about a more common situation. The common situation is as follows. A person walks into a store, sees some kind of merchandise he would like to buy. The price is offered, and he says, yes, I commit myself to buy it. You know, I don't have no cash with me, or whatever there should be. I will come tomorrow and buy, no problem. He walks out of the store, and then it just happens to be that he walks by another store. Another store, he sees it precisely the same merchandise for cheaper. Now here the question is he obligated to his first commitment, or could he here change his commitment and say, well, if I would have known that I could get it for cheaper, then I would never have committed myself originally. As we just discussed now, wasn't it that he said that those who say that you could be lenient in this case, the reason for this is because if I would have known that at the time of execution of sale, it will be a different price, I would never have committed myself. So here too, if I would have known that I could get this same merchandise in a different store for cheap, I would never have committed myself. Precisely the same logic he could have said. So this is a discussion between all kinds of people, yours truly included, and I will tell you my opinion about it. Maybe you will hear from other people differently, but I will tell you my opinion. My opinion is that certainly it cannot be chosen. I think in this case, everybody would agree, even those who are lenient in this change of value between time of commitment and time of sale, those who are making betretare, in this particular case they would be machmir. They would agree that you cannot do it. I will tell you what the reason for this is. Very simple. The whole reason that we are saying that you are permitted to back out if there was a change of value between the time of commitment and the time of sale is because it was self-understood that if there is a change in between, I should be permitted. The person who committed himself should be permitted to back out. Why? Well, we don't look at the commitment like the beginning of the sale, like we said earlier. We are saying there's a commitment to have the sale executed. Given that all the factors that were originally there at the time of commitment are still there, still in existence. But if there is some change as far this commitment is concerned, that's a different story. And then I never obligated myself. However, what happens if I walk into a store and want to buy particular merchandise, and I did not do what you call in English due diligence? I did not make enough research to find out if I could buy it for cheaper or not. I just walked in. Everybody knows that in the market of today, in any market, you could find the same merchandise for different prices. If you do not bother to find out if you could get this merchandise for cheaper, well, this is a shortcoming that you will have to suffer for. Not suffer really, but the commitment is a commitment. This is part of the value. The value of this merchandise never changed from time to commitment, from time of commitment to time of sale. It is exactly the same value. What changed? What changed is the information that you didn't have originally. Namely, that you didn't bother to find out if you get it cheaper. Asher Alkin, and therefore, what have to do? It should not affect your commitment altogether. Your commitment was that if this is the value of this merchandise at the time of sale, you will buy it. It is, in fact, the truth. It is the fact. There was no change in value. There was only a change in your information that you could have gotten this very merchandise for cheaper. And this merchandise you could get for cheaper and more expensive, all within the range, whatever the value of this merchandise is. And so you committed yourself to a more expensive version of price. But nevertheless, there was no change in essence. So therefore, my opinion, there cannot be, a person would not be permitted to change his mind as far as this is concerned. It happens all the time. Yeah. Doesn't matter. If the first store still sells it for a price which reflects the market value, it has nothing to do with it. It doesn't matter. In principle, it doesn't matter. I'm just saying, you're right. This argument wouldn't apply. Yeah, but I will tell you, I would go even further than that if you want to know, right? So this will relieve your concern. Let's say that I walk into a store and made a commitment to buy. Then on the internet, I find out on Amazon that I could get it much cheaper, which is a different market, right? It's similar to your situation of having a different store. It's a different market altogether, right? So it's the same story. today's world, you could always find the same merchandise somehow in different markets for cheaper if you research it properly enough, well enough. So, even according to your understanding, I don't think there should be a problem.
I mean, still went on sale.
I don't hear.
The value didn't change, but a different store, after you made a commitment, it went on sale. A different store started on sale on that,
right.
that's the merchandise.
But still, the price, as far as I'm concerned, the price that you committed yourself to is still the value of the merchandise.
You couldn't have known that at the time of commitment.
Fine, but this is not the main point. The main point is not that you could or couldn't have known it. The main point is that when the Gemara discusses this situation is because the value of the merchandise as such changed from the time of commitment to the time of sale. So you're right that the reasoning that I give wouldn't be appropriate in all situations, as you say, but this is not the main argument. The main argument is that the Gemara doesn't talk about this kind of case. The Gemara discusses when there was a change in value, a true change of value. We're not talking about a change of value.
Yes. Why is it less considered a change of value? In other words,
what?
Since you couldn't have known at the time, and you did do your due diligence, so why is that any different than if the Shire...
Because my commitment was to execute the sale if this is the value of the merchandise. If the value of the merchandise didn't change, I still have to hold to my commitment. The Gemara doesn't discuss this case. The Gemara discusses a case when at the time of commitment, the time of sale, there were two different prices. The value changed. The value of the merchandise as such changed. This is not our case. Our case is a case when my commitment, so to say, still holds to the value, and also the execution is still to the value. Yeah. Why don't you ask the question even further? What happens in a case? Why don't you ask even furthermore? What will be in a case when you could, even after you concluded the sale, you could return it? Well, it has nothing to do with it. As far as the ceremony is concerned, it's still there. You could argue with a different argument. You could argue, I don't know if this is true, but many say this is the case, that all those stores who give you the option to back out even after you concluded the sale really want you to give the option of backing out, and they really want to entice you to buy with them because they are so lenient in their policy of backing out. Fine? So then take all of Mechus Ramon and set in packing. And you can say there's no concept of Mechus Ramon to begin with because they couldn't care less, or they, as a matter of policy, don't care about Mechus Ramon. I don't know if this is the case. If this is the case, if they tell you up front you could always back out, so fine, so then there's not Mechus Ramon to begin. Yes?
If the store itself makes a sale after you committed that, then
No, it doesn't either. Because what we are talking about is, it's worth it. It doesn't. What we are talking about is something very simple. We are saying that we look at the commitment as the beginning of the sale. We committed ourselves, so therefore you shouldn't back out. You shouldn't back out. Now we are saying that even all those who say that you could back out, and therefore we would say it's not a real beginning of the sale, it's a commitment as such. It was a commitment to what? It was a commitment to execute the sale if it reflects the value of this merchandise. And it is, in fact it is. If the store itself decided to make a sale, it doesn't change the true value of this merchandise. Well, maybe you all belong to the camp that argues me. That could very well be.
Is the same thing a Jewish person or a lawyer buying from?
What do you say?
Does it make a difference if you buy from a Jew or a lawyer?
Okay, so I will tell you something very interesting. The discussion, the poskim, no, the discussion really, it's a famous mishpat sholem. It's mechiyah from the Gemara, in Bechoret, that there's no mechus remon ba'agoy, right? So with other words, if you commit yourself to sell to a goy, you could back out. The only little problem that you have in this case is Chil Hashem. But the short of that very little problem, everything is fine and good. One second. Let me finish my sentence. Okay. Now, I want just to explain you something. Right? Yes, Chil Hashem, people say is arbitrary. But it's Chil Hashem with the other one, it's a Kiddush Hashem with somebody else. But whatever that should be. I will say something else. I would maybe explain it in this way. And this comes back to what we discussed at the beginning of the Shia. Namely, if you remember, I think when last time I was here, like 2 months, I spoke to you about, I know about overpricing of whatever should be a deception in prices, it doesn't apply by goy, right? In other words, you are permitted to charge him a price that is higher than the market value of it. And the question is, why would you permit it to do so? After all, you're not permitted to steal from a goy. And the answer is because the concept of a no as such is not at all, is not accepted at all in regular commerce. In other words, if I don't deceive you, if I don't give you false information, which is called deception, I just ask for a higher price, I permit you to do so. You know, it's covered to should the buyer be aware? And if he didn't, again, if he didn't do his due diligence and he didn't find out how much it's worth, so then you would not, in any court of law, you wouldn't win your case. Why? I didn't deceive you. I didn't mislead you. I didn't tell you that this is the value in the current market. I just told you this is the price I would like you to charge. So if there was no deception as such, you are permitted to do so. So similarly, also in halacha, the same applies. There is no inu bar goy because them themselves, this concept of deception does not exist. And this is the famous explanation of the Amnonis, how it works. Okay, so now let's come back to what we are discussing. If we are saying that the concept of kinyonim does not apply in common law, secular law, you don't have such a thing as a mode of acquisition, a kinyon that transfers. So what happens within this case is that you have only one element. The element is meeting of the minds. Okay? Meeting of the minds. Now here, we come to your question. If meeting of the minds in itself is already a transfer of ownership as far as secular law is concerned, you won't have it so simple. But halacha says that mechusar emunah doesn't apply to a goy means if there would be a two-step process. If there's a process, first of all, of meeting of minds, which in itself does not establish any legal obligations, then you could say, well, there's no trust. Trust itself does not create any obligations. Or maybe there's no trust to begin with, right? There's a lack of trust to begin with. A verbal commitment didn't mean anything. But in fact, this is not the case. What happens is, as far as they are concerned, meeting of the mind in itself is a kinyan. So if this would end up in court and you could prove that there was a meeting of minds, they would actively pursue it as a transfer of ownership. They would say, although there was no contract, the contract is only the proof of that, nothing else. So if this is the case, when we find in halacha, there's no mechusar emunah bar goy, it means, from our perspective, meaning from the halachic perspective, if we look at it from the perspective of halacha, and it would come to Beis Din, mitzat hadin, there's no mechusar emunah. But on the other hand, if you're talking from their perspective, certainly, here's the reverse situation from Einol. And this is that, as far as they are concerned, certainly, the meeting of the minds creates ready to transfer of ownership. And therefore, you have to be very careful. Because besides the concept of Chil Hashem, it's not going to end up in Beis Din. Yes, in Beis Din, then you could come up, well, let's look at it, Mitzad Adin, Mitzad Adin, Mitzad Alocha, Mechus Ramon doesn't apply to a goy, but it's not so simple, because Beis Din name it isn't the case. So therefore, a person should be extremely, extremely careful how this happens, because if it ends up in court, he loses out clearly, and no question about it. There is an element of Chil Hashem that the person should be very careful about. Okay, so now let's.
Is that true that in secular law
there is? Yes, certainly, but it's just difficult to prove. How are you going to prove it? Well, you have it all the time. You should have it all the time. Unless that the car business is horse trading, that I don't know. But otherwise, yes, certainly. We have lawyers in the audience? I think so, no? Don't think. A lawyer should tell you. It's certainly the case. Now, here is we discussed. You had here in the in the booklet. You had here the Chum Sofer, the famous Chum Sofer. It's very difficult to understand what the case of Chum Sofer was, or what he means. But let's take the case as such and discuss it for a moment. What happens in a situation where there was no change as far as value is concerned, between the time of commitment and between the time of execution of the sale? But what happened was that the conditions that brought me to commit myself changed. And everybody would agree to that. The case of the consignor was that I sold something. I needed cash. I didn't have cash. So I sold one of my, something I owned. And then And the reason I did it, because I needed cash. I needed cash for buying something else. The person needs to buy a car, he doesn't have cash, so therefore he needs to sell some object of his. So that's what he does. But then he finds out that there is no need for him for a car. He got the car as a present. So now he argues, well, I never committed myself to sell. So now, if he sold it, he sold it. There's nothing to talk about it. But if he didn't sell it, he committed himself to sell it. So the question is, being that the commitment was only done on the presumption that he will need cash for buying this car, and now the need for this car isn't existent anymore, so therefore, he would like to back out. This is the concept of Mekartos and Umder. That's what we're talking about. That's the question, the famous question. From Sofer says clearly that in such a situation, there is no chisoron of, he says, Mishepora. But, and he applies it to the concept of Tretare. It's very difficult to understand how he explained it, what Shidduch here between those two. But to make a long story short, we don't have too much time, that when we remain in such a case, a person could apply the principle of Mekartos and Umder. Which means that always when we understand that the commitment was done on the premise of something, right, and this premise doesn't exist anymore, so then we cancel the original commitment and we say it's not existent anymore and we could back out. Fine. So in this case, we are saying if this happened, I could back out from my commitment, there's no Mechusar Mulefa, this is concerned. But I will tell you something very, very interesting. It's not here, you don't have it here in the booklet, but I will tell you this, the case in Halacha. But also it happens all the time. The case was an actual story, not today, hundreds of years ago in the times of the Rosh. But again, it could happen every day. A person committed himself to buy a house. There was a commitment, a verbal commitment to buy a house. Now, the execution of the sale should have been a few months later. In the interim, what happened was, some people came in, you know, squatters, other people, whatever it should be, and they caused major damage to the house. Major damage. The house is still a house, but nevertheless you need to fix a lot. So now, at the time of execution of the sale, sells the buyer, the purchaser, I don't want to buy. So the question is he obligated to buy it? Is he not obligated to buy it? The Rosh Paskin that is mechuyev to buy it. He's obligated to buy it. He has to hold by his promise. Why? Because the seller could fix it and should fix it. And once he fixes it and brings it back to the original state as it was promised to be sold. So therefore the fact that in the interim there was some problem over there should in any way affect the promise of the purchaser to buy it. So the law remains. Now, we have another situation, which the Rosh doesn't discuss. What happened? Precisely the same situation, but already after the execution of the sale. For example, let's say that we both committed for sale. In the interim, something happened. When it comes to the execution of the sale itself, unknown to the purchaser and the seller, there was damage done to the house, which is clearly found out later on that there was damage done to the house already before the actual purchase took place. It was already existing, but the people didn't know about it. They didn't know that there was damage done to the house. So now the purchaser wants to back out, and the seller says, I'm willing to fix it. So then in this case, the Bach Paskin, the same principle of the Rosh applies here too. Like in the case when there was no purchase yet, if the seller fixes it, the purchaser has to go through with the sale, the same also applies, although the sale was done at the very time when the merchandise, the house itself, was damaged, but nevertheless being that you are able to fix it, so therefore the purchase is still valid, based on the principle of the Rosh. That's what they say. Fine. But now I don't have to tell you, if there is any kind of fixing of any kind of damage, that not always is it being done in a perfect way. In other words, if I see a house, and as I saw it, it's very beautiful, and so on and so forth, and there was damage done, and then it's being fixed. So, it's in a kind of arbitrary situation. Sometimes many people will say it's fixed, And I'm happy with that. And other people will say, no, it's not really the same quality as I had it saw, as I saw it in the beginning. Others say, no, it's the same quality. It's almost the same quality. No, it's not something we really are particular about. So here you have it. Here you have it. This is a question of Tretare in the case of Mekach Tov. Because here the question is, yes, I committed myself. But it's not the same merchandise that I bought. So what you're going to tell me? That you're going to fix it, either before or after. We're talking about the case of before. Right? I'm going to fix it, and therefore, at the time of purchase, it's precisely the same that you commit yourself to buy. It's not the same, because there was a damage, yes, but I'm restoring it, and therefore, my restoration is equal to what you commit yourself to. But it's not precise. So I say purchase, I purchase and say yes, but, you know, I'm from those people who are very, very, like, imperfectionists. So maybe, although maybe the majority of people are not Makpit on that, but I am Makpit. I'm Makpit, I'm a person in particular, and therefore, if it's not perfectly like I saw it in the very beginning, it's not good enough for me. So I will tell you, that a person could not argue that he's from the mute, that he's from the minority of people. He has to be right, that people are from the majority. But in this particular case, we don't have enough time to discuss it. In this particular case, I think he could argue it. And in this situation, even according to those pshitas who hold that betray tare, that when there's a shinui yashar, that you're not permitted to back out, this is similar to the case of the Tzam Sofer when we say that the Mekach Tov you could back out. And also the Mekach Tov, there are many who say that the person after the sale already took place, you cannot back out if we find out that the blemish that is there in this merchandise is such a blemish that most people do not care about, and you say that you are from the mute people. In this particular case, if you're talking about before the execution of the sale, you could say so. And I've explained to you in two words why this is the case. If there was already an execution of the sale, and now you come and say, well, this is a blemish that I care about. I'm from the minority of people who care about, who are perfectionists, who care even about this kind of stuff. So let me tell you, you know, my dear friend, if you're this perfectionist, why didn't you check it out before you concluded the sale? You should have done it before that. LMI, you didn't do that, so this in itself is a proof, the proof is in the pudding, is in America. Right? This itself is a proof that you really don't care. Now, this is only true when you're talking about if already the purchase took place and the damage was there b'shas ma'aseh, at when the purchase took place. So then we are saying, since at the time when the purchase took place, and I didn't check it out, this itself is a proof that I don't care. But what happens if it was in the interim, before I concluded it? If before I concluded it, then certainly I could say, I'm for the minority, and therefore in this case you could argue and say, I back out. And therefore, in such a situation, if he says, I'm a perfectionist, and therefore I want to back out of the sale, although most people will say, this means that I corrected the sale, it still will be fine, and therefore he could back out. Yes?
Let's put aside for a minute, the case that the Rav gave now was about, was let's say, a house, you were damaged to a house. So, good, so that's totally in the person's... if he's finicky or not about it. In a case, let's say, of an automobile, it could be perfect, better than new, but the value automatically declines because it was once hit.
But then I agree with you that according to everybody it could back out. Because this is it, right. This is a trade tariff that is close to Mekach Tov. Because I wanted to buy such a car that has this value. I never wanted to buy a car that was less than the value. Right. Like if you took the car out of the lot, then immediately it decreases in price. That's exactly the same story.
But
yeah.
Over there the guy himself could do Carfax. He could find information himself. He didn't do it. So can you say that shows you really what if you wanted to test sale, you can say, hey, that shows you more
rock. I don't know. Whatever the okay. Show. Okay, thank you.
Say try to help out. I'm saying it needs to happen.